So as Deegan remembers, 2 weeks ago, right?
No, it was like 2 months ago.
Months ago.
Yeah, I know. So 2 weeks ago, this section was here. I can't remember if Andy was there. But I don't think so. You weren't. Yeah. So we were in, what were we studying in? Acts. You're absolutely correct. We are in Acts 13, right? And we were just going over, and it was Paul and Barnabas. They're going on their first mission trip, right? And we kind of ended up that they were preaching at Antioch, correct? Am I saying this right? Am I getting it right? All right, cool. Then what happened at Antioch? Anybody remember? Exactly right. Everybody heard that, right? Right?
I don't know what she said.
You don't know what she said? Is that they are preaching, and then the leaders of that synagogue, are the Jewish leaders, what didn't believe in Jesus, kind of turned everybody against him. They kind of went over and talked to him and got people to go against Paul and Barnabas, and then they left. Paul and Barnabas left. Right? And they went somewhere else. And that's where we pick up in Acts 14. Acts 14, 1 through 2. Cassia. Iconium. So it sounds like deja vu, right? It's like, we just went through this, right? And it's happening again. Barnabas and Paul, you know, they spoke at the local synagogue, it tells us, right? In Jews, the synagogue of the Jews, and many believed in Jesus. So he got many to believe, both Jews and Greek to believe. But for the Jews that did not believe, you know, why do you keep the old ways, you know, they poisoned the mind of those who did believe. And they poisoned them with doubt. You know, it sounds like the same old song and dance, right? They're just going through these motions. But doubt is a powerful weapon of the devil. It's a powerful weapon. It challenges your confidence in your faith. You know, the very things that you need to defeat doubt is confidence and faith. It challenges those. I know I've told some, and I don't know who's been there or not, but as a kid, I was extremely, extremely shy. If you think somebody's shy, think of that person, somebody shyer than that. Right? So I was very shy. I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to say the wrong thing. And failure can be very paralyzing, can't it? Have we all felt that feeling that you don't want to fail and it's like stops you from doing something? Now, I kind of contribute my first job. My first job was a busboy, and then I moved up to being a waiter. So I had to deal with the public. That was my job, right? And I feel like it helped me because I had to talk to total strangers. You know, sometimes it is easier to talk to strangers than somebody you actually kind of know, but it helped me because I was doing it. I had to do it. That was my job. And it helped me overcome some of the fears. Now, I have a question for you guys as far as who knows how to change a flat tire? Have you ever done it?
Sadly, yes.
Have you ever done it? All right. So the rest of you have never changed a flat tire, right? Don't know how. Have no clue. Cassia? No clue.
What?
Let's just start with the one what kind of knows. Are you confident that you can change a flat tire?
No.
No. It's honest. You confident that you could change a flat tire?
Yeah.
TJ? All right. Somehow I got a flat tire out of my car. Can you go? Oh, no. Just kidding. Yeah, you know, unless you've actually done it, it's hard to get that confidence, right? You don't really have that faith in yourself to do it. So practice builds confidence, does it not? Can you see that? How if you've done it, you know, you get more confidence because you don't, you know, you can maybe know how, book smarts versus actually doing it. Now, so it's the same thing with faith. It's the exact kind of thing for faith. First, you have to hear about it, though, right? It makes sense. You have to know somebody has to tell you what to do. So in Romans, let's turn to Romans real quick. It's to the right. Huh? Or it's on the screen. Romans 10, 17. And we'll just go in order. Maddie,
sure.
Can you read that?
So then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God.
So like I said, you need to know what to do, right? So that's why we need to hear first. And then what? After you hear, you have to what? You have to what?
Do.
You have to do, right? You have to follow instructions. James chapter 1, again, it'll be on the board. It's on the screen. Our board. James 1, 22. Ethan?
But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourself.
What? Deceiving. Deceiving yourself, right? So you don't want to deceive yourself, so you need to do. You know, it's not just when you're saying about deceiving yourself is kind of like your confidence. It's like, oh, I could do that, but you don't know if you can, right? So you're not deceiving yourself. You need to do it, right? So, how can we know what we're saying is right if we don't do it and know that it's right? Does that make sense? No? Yes? Did I say that weird? Maybe. But, so if you're not practicing what you're saying, how do you know it's right? So you need to know what you're saying is right by doing it, right? To actually do it. So Barnabas and Paul, you know, they faced the same unbelief, didn't they? The same unbelief and the same result in two different cities. You know, that'd be discouraging, wouldn't it? Would that be discouraging? I think it would be discouraging. You know, the very first time you change your tire, it may not go perfect. Did it go perfect, Maddie? Right. Did it go perfect, TJ? Yes? Wrap it up?
We didn't drive it after. We did it at church in California.
Oh. So it might have went well. Might not have been perfect. And it's always helpful when somebody's there with you, right? But sometimes if you do something wrong, it just means you need to learn from it and you have to do it again, right? It was probably my third, fourth time changing a tire, right? And these lug nuts were so tight. They're just so tight. So I had this brilliant idea. I got a cheater bar. Anybody know what a cheater bar is? It helps you cheat, right? It's right in the name. Helps you cheat. So there's a lug wrench. There's two types of lug wrenches, right? There's a 4-star. It has four different sizes of lugs, right? It looks like a cross. Or there's just one what looks like a crowbar, right? So if you were to put a pipe on the end of that, so it's all about leverage. So the longer the pipe, you don't have to put much pressure on to put more pressure at the lug. Make sense? It's all about leverages, right? So, brilliant me, I put this cheater bar on it, right? So I eat, and then snap. Remember, righty-tighty, lefty-loosey. So all this time, I've changed the tire before. I was tightening that lug. And I snap the little stud, you know, where the nut goes on, what holds the tire on, I snap that off from the car, right? So I just broke my truck. You know, just broke my truck. Had to go tell my older brother, hey, I broke my truck. You know, sometimes coming clean to your failures is hard. It'd be hard. It was like the end of the world. It's like, oh my gosh, I don't want to go tell him. It seemed like a big deal, but actually fixing that mistake wasn't that big a deal. It was pretty easy to fix the bolt that I broke, and my brother only teased me for a little bit, maybe every other year, so it wasn't too bad. But sometimes we go through things to learn things. So here's Paul and Barnabas. They're just going through this discouraging. Yeah, they're doing some good, but they're going through discouraging. What do you think they do? So this group's poisoned the group what was believing to go against them. What do you think they did? Huh? I'm sure they prayed, right? But they continued on, right? So we'll find out in verse 3 of Acts 14. Kayla? So they stayed. They did not give up, right? They didn't, oh, let's throw in the towel. Let's go somewhere else, right? They stayed a long time, it says. So they hung in there. Yes, people were not happy with them. However, some people were being saved, right? So they cared more about the ones they were saving, maybe the few, than how the majority or how people felt about them. You know, their faith was stronger than their fear. We can see that here, right? And then verses 4 through 6 in Acts 14. Can you see that? Okay, good. I didn't know if I was in the way. I'm so tall. Sorry.
But the multitude of the city was divided, part in sides with the Jews and part with the apostles. And a violent attempt was made by both Gentiles and the Jews with the rulers to abuse and stone them. And they became aware of it and fled to Lystra and Derbe, cities of
Iconium. All right, so the conflict escalated, didn't it? Kind of escalated. It got to a violent part, right? It turned violent. And their lives were on the line, right? Knowing these two guys, you know, Barnabas and Paul, I'm sure they weren't really worried about their lives. You know, they were good. They're, you know, of course you're a little bit afraid, but they weren't scared to stand up for Jesus, right? Even if it would have cost them lives. But they were trying to make the best decision in a bad situation. There's violence, you know, it's always a good thing You know, you don't want to escalate the violence. Maybe is to just take a step back, right? You know, we don't need to encourage violence. You know, even on the being right, we don't encourage violence. So they took a step back. But then this would have been another discouraging point, right? Don't you think? It would have been another discouraging point. In verse 7, Deegan? Yeah.
And they were preaching the gospel there.
So they went away, right, to other cities, and what'd they do? They didn't give up, right? They continued preaching, right? Their lives were literally at risk, and they didn't give up. 8 through 10, TJ?
Observing him intently and seeing that he had faith to be healed, said with a loud voice, "Stand up straight on your feet," and he immediately walked.
All right, so back in Acts chapter 3. Back in Acts chapter 3, you don't have to turn there, but we see Peter heal this guy. This guy was crippled from his mom's womb. And he told him to stand up and walk. Sounds familiar? Right, so it's exactly the same thing, isn't it? It's the same kind of event, very similar. And I could imagine Paul right here. He turns to Barnabas and says, "Hey, Barnyard." Now, guys, we like to joke with each other. So, you know, so he's talking to Barnabas. He says, "Watch, I know how this works. Watch, I did this miracle. I performed this miracle just happened, then I'll start praising Jesus. Just wait for it." All right? And then in Acts 14, 11 through 13, Cassia? Yeah. So probably not what Paul thought, right? Probably, I mean, it's probably like, what? What just happened? What? Verse 14, we'll see what they do. Maddie? So we don't really ever see Paul lose his cool, right? But it says, what did Paul do? Tore his clothes, right? And then what's happening, tearing of the robe was kind of a Jewish way of expression, just a frustration and distress and grief. And it would probably have been just, you know, their neckline. You know, they don't get all weird. I've heard people is like, oh, they were running around in diapers. No, they weren't. They weren't just, you know, they didn't tear all their clothes up. They didn't have holes. They didn't have pants like Andy here. They just probably got the Torah and just tore a little bit like, argh. You know, I like to picture it as something where it's just a release. A release of, it's kind of like counting to 10 whenever you get mad. Right? Anybody ever tell you to do that? It kind of helps you just a little calm down, get focused, so that you don't say something that you would in anger. Right? So they were probably just trying to collect themselves. It's like, what is going on here? I can't believe this is going on. So they're just a little frustrated right now. And then they go around and they try to convince them. In 15 through 18, That's tiny writing.
And saying, men, why are you doing these things? We also are men with the same nature as you, and preach to you that you should turn from these useless things to the living God who made the heaven and the earth. See, and all the things around them that are in them. Who are bygone generations, so allow all the Jews to walk in their own ways. Nevertheless, that he did not leave himself without the witness, it is in that he did good, gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness, and with these things they should scarcely restrain their multitude.
Awesome. I like how you read. You're like passionate. It's awesome. So we see here that, you know, that he's trying to explain what happened. You know, I think there's a point where there's yet another changing point in the gospel. Because up until this point, you know, when they're preaching the gospel in the Bible, at least the person they're preaching to has kind of an idea who God is, maybe who Jesus is. But these Gentiles, they didn't know. They didn't know. So this was a change, right? It's a change. So Paul had to change up not the gospel. He didn't change the gospel at all. He had to change on how he presented the gospel, right? You see that? How he presented the gospel. He presented it in a different way for those who don't know, who's never been taught. You know, he's saying that, you know, you may never have grown up knowing about God, you know, from your very birth. Your parents might have never told you, but God was there, right? God was there, and he still blessed you. He still loves you, and he's hoping for the day you turn to him, and that's what they're saying. Right? It says about the bygone generations. It says, you know, you guys might not have known about them, but God's blessed you with the rain, with your crops, with food. God was always there, and he loves you guys. That's what he's saying to them. But even with this, you know, he's trying to talk to them and not get them all to get all sacrificed. You know, but they're having a hard time stopping them, right? Changing their mind. And then Acts 14, 19 through 20.
Then Jews from Antioch and
Iconium. And just pinning it real quick, is that where were these places? Antioch and Iconium. These were the two places where people didn't really, you know, like, where they turned people against Paul and Barnabas, right? Remember? All right.
Came there, having persuaded the multitude, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. However, when the disciples gathered around him, he rose up and went into the city. And the next day, he departed with Barnabas to Derbe.
So this was the group, right? So there's those two groups, right? And they're pursuing them. They're just like chasing the countryside, trying to catch up with Paul and Barnabas. And they get to this group, and this group's all, hey, their gods have come down in likeness of men, right? And they get those guys to go against them. So this is the group that just was praising them, just calling them gods. And what do they do to Paul? They stoned him, right? You know, and, you know, what is that? That's hitting with rocks, right? Huh? Maybe not tie him up, but they are like throwing rocks, pelting him with rocks. You know, and I'm not sure, and nobody's sure, did Paul actually die that day? We're not sure. Maybe, but I don't think it was just a little pebble like, hey, I'm stoning you. No, it was some rocks, right? And if you think somebody's dead, I'm sure he was severely beaten, right? That'd be hard. I mean, bruises all over, right? Broken bones. Severely, severely beaten that day. It would have been a miracle for a quick recovery, yet it happened. I want you to see that it was a miracle right there. A miracle did happen right there. So let's look back at all we've seen. So Barnabas and Paul's first ministry trip, their first one, right? They're like, yeah, it's going so great, right? Is it going great? No, you wouldn't think. Conflict after conflict. Every time they step forward, they get pushed back two steps, right? That's probably how some might feel. I have this friend. His name's Donnie, right? And somehow, who knows how, he always gets in these funny situations, right? He's a guy, he has tons of stories, and he always cracks up about all of his stories. But him and another friend were working down at a boathouse in Roosevelt last week, actually. So it's kind of cold, not really boating season, right? Not really a vacation part. I know it's Roosevelt, but it's still cold. It's still winter there also. So they're there, and I don't know if anybody's ever been on a boathouse. No? It's just a boat where you can sleep on it, right? So it's just a boat, but and it's kind of like a trailer park, if you will. Because you, at the marina, you park your boats, and then they have showers and restrooms so you don't have to do it in the boat because it only has a small holding tank. You take showers. So he went up and took a shower. He's coming back at night, right? He's coming back, and there's little docks. And for some reason, he turns at three houseboats down from where he was supposed to, right? He turns in right into the water. Right, it's big old splash, and nobody sees it. Unfortunately, that'd be hilarious, but nobody sees it. Now, my other friend, he's inside the boathouse, door shut, watching TV. Right, so it's the end of the time. They're not working right now. They're just there. So the water is cold. I don't know if you've been there during the summer. It's nice and warm, but now it's cold, right? So he tries to get up. Now, between the dock or where the planks are, where you walk, the runway, I don't know what you call it, but you're talking at least 2 foot. Now, Donnie has a lot of insulation around him. I'm trying to be politically correct. He's a bigger guy, right? So he tries with all his might. He can't get up. He can't get up. So he kind of panic sets in. At this point, and this is also to let you know, panic does kind of set in sometimes when you're in a situation, correct? So he goes, just holds on to the side of the boat, and there's this little cord coming off the side of the boat, there's a little cable coming out so they could have TV or satellite. But he's holding on, not knowing that if you're ever in this situation, that if you swim to the back of the boat, if you ever swim to the back of the boat, it's lower. It's lower at the back of the boat so people could jump off and swim, right? So 60 feet away, he could have got out onto the boat. But he's sitting there. Now, something you might also not know is that in 40-degree water, which is cold, it's probably a little bit colder than what Roosevelt was, the normal person could only survive 10 to 20 minutes, depending on your size. So it doesn't take much. Because when your temperature of your body, which is normally at, 98. It's right there. I'm not a doctor. No. It's close to 98, yeah. Right? It's close. It's 97. You know, you're probably good. But if you go down to 95, things start happening. As far as you get kind of elusive, it's almost like you're drunk. Because you start slurring, can't really focus, you don't have muscle control. So it starts happening very quickly. Yes? Okay. So anyways, dies in the water. And from his story, is like when he went down in, don't know, nobody was there. But he said, oh, I felt like I went down 20 feet when he first went in. And then he thinking he was in there about 20 minutes in this cold water. So he's sitting there holding on, and he's yelling for help. But like I said, there's nobody on the boat dock except for him and my other friend that's in there watching TV. So my friend, he thinks he hears something. So he opens up, and he's like, Donnie's been gone a long time. So he opens up the door, looks out, sees somebody way up by the restrooms, the showers, like, I don't know. So he goes back to watching TV, right? And then a little bit while later, he thinks he hears something again, and he opens the door, but this time he hears help. So he's like, somebody there? It's like, and he hears them. He hears them three boats down, but it's dark. He takes a little bit to find them. And finally getting to them, and he's trying to get them up. But every time he grabs Donnie's hand, you know, Donnie doesn't have the strength to hold on for Jerry. Jerry's my other friend. Jerry to pull him up onto the dock. My friend, Donnie, he turns to Jerry, he's looking at Jerry, and he says, that's okay. I'll just go now. I mean, it's actually a surreal moment, right? Sad. Now, if you know Jerry, he doesn't take that lightly. He's just like, no, you're getting out of the water. So he reaches down, grabs his belt loop, and remember, now he's a big guy, but somehow he gets him up on the dock. So everything's fine. From what I understand, the next day, Donnie was still gray. He looked gray. So it was a very serious moment. You know, your situations in life can get very dire. But you need to not give up. Right? You may have to ask for help. And I know sometimes we get very prideful. I get very prideful and we get very stubborn. And sometimes that's hard to ask for help. But sometimes we need to ask for help. Doesn't mean you're giving up. You're just getting some help. We cannot give up. The people around you may give up. You know, your best friends may give up. That means that you just need to be stronger. And you need to keep going. In Acts 14, 21 through 22, Paul and Barnabas, Andy.
And when they had preached the gospel to that city and made many disciples, they returned to Lystra,
Iconium,
and
Antioch. All right, so Barnabas and Paul, things weren't going great for them. Paul probably died. You know, they did not stop preaching the gospel. And then notice the cities, right? Notice that list of cities they returned to. It means they went back to these cities. Like Lystra, that's where Paul just got stoned, right? They returned there. Iconium in Antioch, those are the ones where they had the attempts on their lives. They went back to these cities and they made disciples, right? So notice this. This first mission trip, I know when you're reading it, it sounds like it could be happening really quick, like day after day. But they estimate it took at least a year to 2 years. So they spent some time. Excuse me. They spent some time. You know, and to make a disciple, so what these disciples would have been doing is they would have been staying there after Paul and Barnabas would leave, and they'd continue on. They would start this church. They'd continue on. So to do that, they need to work with them for a long time. So they were in these cities that were completely against them for a long time. They didn't give up. They went back to cities that threw them out. In Jeremiah 17, 7 through 8, all right, so when I was a kid, when I was in high school, I picture this kind of more like poetry. And I was like, oh, I just do not get poetry, but now I kind of like it. I don't know, it seemed like a girl thing. I don't know, maybe. But it kind of reads like poetry. So if the tree is planted by the water and the root is spread out to by the river. So what does that mean to you guys? So if that's like somebody who trusts in God, what does that mean to you? Kayla?
It's strong and it can't be moved.
It's strong and can't be moved, right? So what's feeding that tree? What's nourishing and encouraging it?
Hope.
Huh?
Hope.
Yeah, it has hope because its roots, where you know, because a tree, it gets its nourishment, it gets its water from water, right? And who's the water in this case? Who's the water? Who's living, literally living water for that tree? God, right? Who's the tree? Huh? You guys, right? So if you're trusting in God, you guys are the tree, and God's the living water. So your roots, when it's talking about stretched out, so that means it's getting feeding water from the river, which is usually always running, right? All right, and then it also says about it is that it doesn't fear the heat or anxious about the drought. All right, yeah. So what is it talking about there? Right, because heat, right, is not fun, and drought's not fun for a plant, I'm sure. Like, oh my gosh, not again, right? So it's saying that, you know, things might not be always pleasant, but I don't have to worry because why?
Because the river's right there.
Yes, the river's right there. His water's right there. Right? Because God is on your side. God strengthens us. Right? So God strengthens us. In Hebrews 4:16, DJ. So we need to trust in whom? And yourself? God, right? It's one of those youth group questions. I answered more than 90% of the time is God, right? We need to trust in God, right? And what can't we do? What should we never do? Yeah, but I'm looking for not give up, right? We should never give up, right? Because who's on our side? God, right? Kayla, would you end us in prayer? Amen.